Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland Auto Home Life Business Insurance. The service and price means something to you? Means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Talk to Jeff Hartman in just a few moments from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Here's a little bit more, by the way, on the story about Michigan tickets. For a while on Monday, they were giving them away. The two tickets with a total face value of $150 could be obtained for obtaining two Coca-Cola products for $3. Okay, they were talking about the one-liter jobs. Okay. The promotion was immediately pulled Monday night after mass panic ensued when Michigan officials found out about it. Several individuals had posted about the promotion on Twitter. Can you blame them? And a Michigan spokesman told ESPN that Coca-Cola had purchased a block of tickets for the Saturday's game against Minnesota with the purpose of using them in a promotion for students. I mean, that Coca-Cola did that deliberately. Okay? And it never got approved by Michigan. Michigan had final approval for the promotion, but because of a miscommunication, Coca-Cola thought it could just go ahead with the two-ticket promotion. Okay? Coca-Cola is a great partner of ours, and it purchased a limited block of tickets for the Minnesota game for a Coke retail activation aimed at Michigan students, the spokesman said. Due to a miscommunication in the approval process, the promotion should not have run as is. Any of tickets obtained Monday through the Coca-Cola promotion will be honored at Saturday's game, according to the spokesman, which that's the only choice they have. It's unknown how many tickets Coca-Cola purchased. It's also unknown exactly how many were passed along to fans Monday. This promotion was available at the university's UGO convenience stores in Ann Arbor. Wow.
A snafu. So,
wow.
I think that's pretty funny. If Coca-Cola purchased the tickets, why would they need Michigan's approval to do what they did then? I guess there must be some contractual obligation there, but for heaven's sakes, it obviously was embarrassing to the University of Michigan and athletic department, et cetera. And so it exposes their so-called sellout at the Big House since the beginning of civilization as perhaps maybe not being as truthful as it might otherwise be.
I don't worry about such things. I just know that they have a problem, obviously, with tickets right now. But this is an issue where in stadiums across the country, you have stadiums that are really big. I mean, Penn State's a perfect example. They sold 99,000 tickets for the game against UMass. Now, that's pretty impressive, and they have 5,000 new season ticket holders compared to last year. But you also have a 107,000-seat stadium, which now you're working like the devil to somehow fill right now. It's not an easy prospect when the stadium is larger. That's why you notice in the NFL, they're building new stadiums. They are not building them larger. They're building them smaller. And they're relying on TV revenue to be the key to get this done.
Well, Major League Baseball, Steve, the same way. Look at the old Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh and now PNC Park. It went from about at least 60-some thousand seats for baseball when it was the old Buccos at Three Rivers, and now PNC Park goes about 39,000.
Right, and that's exactly the right way to go. People have talked for years about expanding Fenway Park. Fenway Park is the right size already, and because you want a filled house. You want excitement. TV wants excitement. If you have a place that is so big, which is at the moment the case here, you know, and maybe they can turn things around, and certainly the way they've started at 4-0 has a lot of people excited about the future of what Penn State football can be. There's no question. So filling it could be an easier proposition than we think down the road. But still, 107,000 is still 107,000 to fill. And you'd like to have, idealistically, from your marketing point of view, to have your, quote, ticket in demand.
Sure.
Well, winning helps that out a lot, too. And
Here's the bottom line. Okay, if you are winning and not selling out, then you do have a marketing
problem. Right.
Okay. You can market till the cows come home, and if people aren't interested in your product, does it really matter how much you market? No.
No.
But if you have a great product and you're not selling out, then you have to examine exactly where you are. All right, let's bring in Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. The Steelers have decided that against Tampa Bay, they'll go with Old Timers Day on the defensive side.
Throwback unis as well?
I mean, Mel Blunt's going to play corner.
Awesome.
Let's bring in Jeff Hartman. Jeff, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
All right, Jeff, let's get to it. What a performance the other night. Is it hard to really find a flaw with what they did?
Yeah, it actually is. Looking at the statistics after the game, you really have to dig deep to try to find any deficiency that the Steelers had in that Sunday night effort against the Panthers. I mean, you can still point to a really slow start, obviously, score 9-3 going into the halftime break. But, I mean, they played a great team game, which is something they hadn't put together in four quarters yet this year. So it was difficult to find any deficiencies in the team.
Ben Roethlisberger, there are a couple times in that ball game where he held on to that ball, which has been a staple of his entire career. But the payoff was different the other night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think what you see more with Ben is he just uses that one last pump fake, that one last second with football to slide away from pressure more than he used to run around and really play. People always call it the sandlot style of football that people saw. I think back to that incredible game that they had in Baltimore where he scrambled left, rolled all the way back around to the right side of the field and hit Santonio Holmes with that questionable touchdown to win the game. You don't see that too much anymore. And you look at the game Sunday night, he stepped up in the pocket, slid outside of pressure, and then he has his eyes always downfield and hit Antonio Brown twice on plays where he did that for touchdowns in the red zone. So, yeah, I think there is a difference. But Ben holding onto the ball is what makes him great. You don't want to take that away from him.
Not only that, he on the touchdown pass to Antonio Brown, where he really waited, then he released it, the pump fake he made, which was a legitimate follow-through pump fake, and he held onto the ball. How strong is this guy?
He has extremely strong hands, and if you watch him play week in and week out every snap, like myself and many other Steeler fans do, you see him do this before, and he did it on the biggest stage of football in the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 43 in 2009. He had a similar pump fake where he threw the fake so hard that the cornerback not only bit, but Roethlisberger never even put the ball into his other hand. He just kept it in his throwing hand and hit Antonio Holmes with a big play on that drive to end up winning the game. It just goes to show you that I think a lot of times some of those little things that Roethlisberger does really are underappreciated across the NFL landscape. And we're talking about the experts on ESPN and different arenas like that. But, I mean, he is very underappreciated, in my opinion, and a great, great quarterback.
All right, let's talk about James Harrison. Because the years of Cincinnati were not fruitful years. Your thoughts on James Harrison?
Well, obviously he's back in the fold in Pittsburgh. I think that's a good spot for him. You look at him in Cincinnati, he never looked comfortable. I did try to watch as much of those Bengals games as I could because I was always curious because he did turn down the Steelers' offer and I wanted to see what he did in another team. And he just never looked comfortable. They tried to have him as that hybrid linebacker that would move around everywhere from the inside linebacker position to the outside. It was never just his job, which was the Steelers, which was, you know, I'm going to have the edge, I'm going to set the edge on the run for the run game. I'm going to get after the quarterback in the passing game. I don't think that Pittsburgh's going to ask him to come in and be a starter, though. I think fans that think that might kind of be disappointed. Arthur Motes is the guy that's going to start the game. Tomlin even said that today in his press conference. But I think James Harrison's going to see time, whether it's to spell players that are winded or whether it's actually be in certain positions, you know, an obvious passing down if James Harrison can still get after the quarterback, which I think that he can. I think a lot of fans are real hesitant about this move, but I actually think it's a good one for the Steelers.
I thought he looked old, Jeff. I thought he looked like a guy in the tail end of his career regardless. I think he was uncomfortable because he can't run like he used to.
Well, yeah, but I agree with that. I'm not going to disagree with you there, but I also see a guy that was in a new system and a new team, a new city, and I think that if you don't use him every single down and just put him in positions where he can succeed, I think Dick LeBeau, who knows him so well, can certainly do that, then he can still play a role. I'm thinking he's not going to even see the snaps that Brett Kiesel is going to get, and Brett Kiesel obviously is the same age as Harrison. If he can still, if he has 15 snaps in him of dominant play where he can beat that tackle, beat the tight end, and make a play on the quarterback, then that's really all they're asking him to be, barring an injury, obviously, to Modes or Worlds on the outside.
Any other moves that they can make right now to fill the breach with the three injuries that they have?
I think they're set at inside linebacker. Sean Spence, which is a great story, by the way, is going to probably make his first NFL start of his career after having that devastating knee injury as a rookie in the preseason.
Right.
You have Vince Williams, who started 11 games for the Steelers last year, who is obviously another capable inside linebacker. I think they're okay at inside linebacker. I think it's cornerback that you have to think that they're looking around and maybe seeing who's available, because with Ike Taylor out for, rumor is, 6 to 8 weeks with a broken forearm, you're going to have to fill the void. Now, William Gay's going to go to the outside in their base 3-4 defense. When they go to nickel and sub-package football, he's going to cover the slot like he has been, because that's his bread and butter. But you have to have someone that's going to cover the outside. And you saw even in the brief stint against the Panthers, Antoine Blake was out there. He's only 5'9". They were literally throwing it to Kelvin Benjamin every single time on that one-on-one matchup. And you can't expect a guy that's only 5'9 to compete with a wide receiver that's 6'5". So they have some question marks there. And whether they bring in someone like Champ Bailey for a workout, you know, that's yet to be seen. The rumors are kind of swirling. But I wouldn't expect anything, at least not this week.
All right, so this week, Tampa Bay, that was as bad a football game as I've seen a National Football League team play in the Thursday night game against Atlanta. I mean, CBS wanted to put on reruns of Gunsmoke in the second half. So, what's your thought on Lovie Smith's football team?
I think it's a team that has potential. I mean, they have some skilled players. They lost their quarterback. And their quarterback wasn't that good to begin with. I mean, Josh McCown is not a guy that's going to, you know, cause the defensive coordinators to stay up at night wondering how they're going to defend this guy. But yet he was still capable enough to get the ball to Mike Evans and different receivers that they have down there. I think their defense was what was the most disappointing. That's kind of Lovie Smith. You know, he was a defensive guy, defensive coordinator before becoming a head coach. It's kind of what he hangs his hat on. And they just got absolutely routed against the Atlanta Falcons. So that's what surprised me the most. Now, they do have some injured players that are going to be coming back to the lineup, they hope, against the Pittsburgh Steelers Sunday. Yet I just don't know if that's going to make that big a difference in the outcome of the game if, this is a big if, Pittsburgh plays up to their capabilities and not down to their opponent, which they have been known to do in the last few years.
All right. Bell and Blount. Now, they've been talked about for a variety of reasons this year, but let's talk about the football reasons. They both climbed over 100. What can Bell give them, and what kind of closer is Blount when you have the lead?
I think that Le'Veon Bell, in my opinion, is easily a top five running back in the NFL right now, and he's only a second year guy. And I think a lot of it has to do with, he reminds me of Marshall Faulk. Wow. With a great pass catcher, obviously that greatest show on turf back in the 90s with Kurt Warner. He was as much a threat in running the ball as he was out of the backfield, and that is kind of Le'Veon Bell's calling card right now. You look at his statistics, and he just in total yards gained, no one's even close in terms of running backs or even any person that's going to carry the football, wide receiver, running back, tight end. But I think that LeGarrette Blount, we finally got to see kind of a little taste of what he's capable of, and that's just downhill speed, downhill aggressive running, something the Steelers really hadn't seen since Jerome Bettis in terms of just being physical, hitting the hole hard. And if you watch Le'Veon Bell, he's almost the complete opposite when it comes to their approach of running the football. He one cut and go. And both of those styles work. And I think that when you're looking to just grind out the game, like you said, in that closer role, I think that's a pretty good 1-2 punch the Steelers have right now in their backfield.
Staple play for the Steelers offense has been the double-double teams. And on the long run by Bell, it was both their left and right. Can you discuss, Jeff, the progress that offensive line has made in coming together? Because they did a series of drafts specifically to allow this to happen. Now, how's it panning out?
The offensive line has been one of the best stories of the season so far. And they're still very young. And so far, just 3 weeks of football. I mean, a lot of that points back to Mike Munchak. They brought in to be the offensive line coach. He's considered the best in the business of what he does in that capacity. But the Pittsburgh Steelers are leading the NFL in rushing. And I don't if people don't follow the team that closely, that hasn't happened in a long time. And I don't care if it's only 3 weeks. The fact that they are even in that category and leading in that category says that this offensive line can play with some aggression and they're able to get off the ball. And they have a very athletic interior line. Dan DeCastro is very athletic.
Yes.
Marquise Pouncey might be the most athletic center in all of the NFL. And then they had Cody Wallace in there, who is more athletic. He was at left guard. He was more athletic than Raymond Foster, who is the typical starter who was out with an ankle injury. So they have a very athletic interior that's able to move like you talked about in those bread-and-butter plays where they pull the guard and seal off that hole. Some of those holes are huge on Sunday night.
Jeff Hartman, thanks so much. Appreciate it very, very much.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
That's Jeff Hartman, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. In a related note, the Steelers have also signed John McMakin. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to insurance, let's face it, the options and the sources keep changing. It gets confusing. Do you really know what you're getting? Better yet, do you know what you're not getting? Save time and save your mind with a simple call to the Kratzer Insurance Agency of Mount Pleasant Mills or Northumberland. For 51 years, the Kratzer Insurance Agency has been keeping the Susquehanna Valley insured and protected from whatever comes our way. If your policy is up for renewal, or you suffer the disappointment of cut-rate insurance deals on the internet or over the phone, then listen. Don't sacrifice personal service. The Kratzer Insurance Agent, your independent agent, has your best interest in mind. Of course they have competitive prices.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
I ain't as good as I once was. My, how the years have flown. But there was a time back in my prime.
Great news. Lynn Swann has also now signed with the Steelers.
Let's go down to Swanee.
As has John Stallworth.
Oh, man, the Super Bowl rings are coming back.
Come on, tell me.
Kent Nix.
Oh, well, good. I thought you were going to say Kent Graham for a minute.
No, and they can sign literally any running back to get 3.9 yards a carry.
Oh,
so
no.
The options there are wide open.
Meanwhile, Jerome Bettis is not coming out of retirement. He's going to be at the Bettis Bar and Grill right by Heinz Field and PNC Park. He's
please,
in the restaurant business.
Please
he's
tell
not coming
me,
out.
Please tell me they have a bus stop nearby there.
They have the bus stops right at the grill.
There you go.
But he said he did think about coming out of retirement to put his average yards per carry to the 4.0 level. But
just to end the Steve Jones jabbing.
Yeah, exactly. He says,
there's this guy in Central PA that keeps reminding me that I'm at 3.9.
Exactly.
That's not a good number, sport.
Okay. What a beautiful day in the Central Susquehanna Valley, Steve.
Yeah. I'm telling you right now, if Le'Veon Bell was averaging 3.9 yards a carry, you'd be complaining.
Again, 3.9 rounds up to 4.
Yeah.
4 is second down and 6. Then it's third down and 2. Then it's first down. I don't see the problem with 4 yards a carry. Now, 3 yards a carry, 2 yards a carry, that's a problem. 4, I think, is acceptable.
Oh, you're serious. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was absolutely serious. I'm sorry.
I apologize. I guess I took it the wrong way.
Yeah, 3.9 is just
serious.
3.9 is just a rounding error.
He's in my Hall of Fame, man.
Yes, he is. But that's the bowling Hall of Fame.
I'm not in that one.
Not yet.
No, I only had a 297. I didn't get the 300.
Oh, man. You were so close.
Listen, I freely admit it, I choked.
Oh, you did on that last shot?
I did choke on that one. I can say it because it was me.
Nobody else, not the pin boy.
No.
So did Bettis at the goal line against the Colts.
Oh!
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm surprised we didn't come back with a package of Jerome Bettis highlights.
I didn't have enough time to find them all.
There's so many. Hey, Steve, the weather report for this coming week.
Yeah. Really?
Weather report for Saturday in State College is 80 and beautiful sunshine for homecoming at Penn State.
And first and 10 for the Steelers. They give it to Bettis, and that's a 3.5-yard pickup. It'll be second down and 6.5.
3.9. Second down and 6.1.
And it's going to be third and 3. They're going to have to throw for it. All right.
Third and 3 really opens up the playbook, as opposed to third and 8.
33 carries on the ball game for 92 yards. Fabulous performance. He just dominated the game.
You realize if he gets into the hall, I will not let you hear the end of it ever. Ever.
Well, I feel very confident that not happened.
And I'm picking you up on my way to Canton, and I'm dragging you in the back of the vehicle because you're going to have to go in there and say, "Hi, Jerome, nice to meet you, Steve Jones. I know 3.9, I've been giving you a hard time about it, but I'm glad to be here now that you're in the Hall of Fame. And I want to be there to see that."
I would say it to him.
I'm going to take a picture.
I own up to what I say. The guy was a great player. Is Hall of Fame numbers 3.9 yards a carry? No.
Should the Hall of Fame be just numbers? Shouldn't there be more than just numbers involved in the Hall of Fame?
But, okay, even then I still don't put him in.
The guy had his own line at Giant Eagle of food products. I mean, that should say something about his popularity and worth.
Carl Yastrzemski had his own loaf of bread. All right, so what? It's whatever you think he can sell. This is the Hall of Fame. This is the elite of the elite.
Okay, all true.
I mean, this is the class of the greatest of the greats.
I'm done.
And I'll be honest with you, I thought he should have gone into the Hall of Fame this past time because I was underwhelmed by this class.
Actually, I think that was the class I thought he was going to get into as well. I think I said that to you many times, and now I think it's a real uphill climb.
What were
if I had a vote, I would have voted for him. I mean, to me, the guy that deserved to be in, that had to fight his way in was Ray Guy, and he got in.
I think he should have been in, really.
Yeah, I think he should too. I think there's, you know, specialists, just like relief pitchers in baseball, there's too much of this for people who are supposed to be savvy about the game.
Yeah.
They aren't. I'm sorry, I'm not going to vote for a relief pitcher to be in the Hall of Fame. Hey, yo, dog. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you watch the games? Okay.
You know, a couple of days ago, Steve, Ed Bouchette did an article in the Post-Gazette talking about Bettis and what he needs to do to land in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's fifth leading rusher in NFL history. 9 years later, he's sixth. The most prolific big back in history. I mean, it's a very interesting article.
Well,
hold on a second.
He is not the most prolific big back in the history of the NFL.
That's okay? not my words. Those aren't my words.
Okay, Jim Brown is okay. Here's Jim Brown. Okay, hello. How's everything down there, Jerome?
Listen, I'm telling you what was in the article. Ed said he by far was the most prolific big back in NFL history, playing at more than 250 pounds.
All right, well, Jim Brown did not play more than 250 pounds. He actually was in shape.
All right, that's it. Talk Penn State Northwestern. I'm done.
Yeah. Steve, I think
You're absolutely right.
The word frustration.
He is the best 500-pound running back ever. he and Cookie Gilchrist.
Ooh.
All right. Ooh. How about that? I compared him to the great Cookie Gilchrist.
Long gone, but not forgotten.
Kevin, are you okay?
I'm fine.
He is not. He is not fine, Steve. He's
pouting.
No, I would call it pouting.
41 fumbles.
Who had 41 fumbles?
Jerome Bettis had 41 fumbles in over 3,600 touches. Barry Sanders had 41 fumbles in 3,400 touches. 1 in 84. Bettis was 1 in every 90.
And guess which running back I would have in a heartbeat.
All right, you got an interview. Let's go.
Yeah. Get this guy on.
Okay, if I were you, I would not have made that comparison.
You're talking
Barry
statistics.
Barry Sanders, Jerome Bettis.
Talking statistics.
Eyeball test. Look at Barry run. All right. Let's get to Dave Edit. Dave, play-by-play voice, good friend, outstanding job listening to Dave and Teddy, in fact, on Teddy Albrecht on Saturday. Dave, how you been, bud?
Steve, good to be with you. How you been?
I've been doing well, and I hope you've been doing well as on top of that. Listen to you and Ted on Saturday for a while driving in. Great as always. To get the win, just to break through, what do you think that meant for the guys?
Well, I think, honestly, you know what it's like when a team starts out 0-2, you start hearing people say, well, maybe this team is going to win a game. And I never felt that was a risk with this team, but at the same time, the expectations were such that 0-2 start, losing at home to Cal, which won one game last year, and to Northern Illinois, which, let's be honest, has been a pretty solid program, but right. Still a Big Ten team is expected to win that game. Then you start hearing a lot of doubts raised. So I think from that standpoint, even though it's an FCS team, I do think that it was reassuring to a lot of people.
Talk about Trevor Siemian. I know when they came in here a couple of years ago, he got in for a few plays, and the two of us in our booth were taken aback by his arm strength. Kind of
give us a feel for what the arm strength means, but also his feel for the game right now, Dave.
Well, you know, it's hard to say, Steve, because I think Trevor would tell you this hasn't been his best start to a season. He had been sharing the job the last few years with Kane Coulter. And coming into this season, the job was clearly his. He's the number one guy. And, you know, he's come on in the past, even though he played a lot last year because Kane was hurt. But he's usually come on in spot situations, kind of a change of pace guy against Penn State a couple of years ago, as you point out, at Michigan a couple of years ago, a game that the Wildcats eventually lost in overtime. But he came in right before halftime, took him on a drive down the field through a beautiful back shoulder touchdown pass at the end of the half. And we have the same reaction. It's like, wow, I mean, this guy can really fling it. And he has shown signs of that at times. But I think a problem for him right now is that there's has been kind of running back by committee, which I know you guys are familiar with. But there's also been kind of receiver by committee. The Wildcats, if you look at where this team is as far as their wide receiver core, I really think it going into the season shaped up as one of the best in the Big Ten. You had Christian Jones returning, Tony Jones, right, a big play threat, Kyle Prater possibly coming into his own, Cameron Dickerson. Then you have the super backs, so their version of the H-back kind of guy with Dan Vitale. A lot of targets there, but so far they haven't really found that go-to guy. Christian Jones is out for the year. Tony Jones has missed the last couple of games. Other guys, Dickerson has been inconsistent. Vitale hasn't played his best football. And I just think that, you know, it's been a combination of the quarterback maybe being off target. His accuracy hasn't been quite as good as it normally has been. And part of that may be the fact that, you know, the guys that he's used to throwing to haven't either haven't been in there or haven't caught the ball consistently.
What did the loss of Benrick Mark mean? And then I'll transition to how well have the two freshmen, what have they, how have they helped to jumpstart the running game?
Well, I mean, I'll start there. Justin Jackson and Solomon Vault, Vault an East Coast kid, by the way, from outside D.C., they've been terrific. And they are going to get more and more carries this weekend. I mean, we're already seeing it. Trayvon Green, very solid last year with Mark's injury. He was their leading rusher. But early on this year, there's been a considerable difference when it's been Trayvon carrying the ball or Justin or Solomon in the backfield. There, it's been pretty apparent. Now, Green had a better day on Saturday, but again, so do those other guys. They're pretty good. Losing Venrick, look, if you take the most dynamic offensive player off any team in the Big Ten, there's going to be an impact, and especially the timing of it coming in August during fall camp. It was tough. There's no question. They were counting on having him, and that would give them the luxury of bringing the freshmen along a little more slowly. They have to hurry them up now and throw them in there, and ultimately, they'll probably be better for it, but in the short term, it means you've got some growing pains, and some growing pains for them and some growing pains, I think, for this team.
Dave Ennett, play-by-play voice, Northwestern football, joining us. Dave, on the other side, I see a Chichi Arugusa, universally respected. Ibrahim Campbell has 9 interceptions in his career. Van Hoos at the corner, Colin Ellis in the middle. As a group, how well have they played?
Well, you know, they're playing a little better. I think that if you go purely on stats, and you know the risk of that, you know, their numbers are not real good. But they started off playing against California, which ran close to 100 plays, I think, in that game. And they came out, and look, any of them will tell you, the whole team came out for some reason. The first quarter of their opener, they didn't show up. And they got down 17-0, and it was like a stunned silence at Ryan Field. And they got better as the game went on. They came from 31-7 down to 31-24, had the ball, and were driving. But, you know, I think the defense, though,
has gotten better since that first quarter against California. They've fallen victim to a couple of explosion plays. They had one in that game against Cal. But for the most part, they've avoided that. They're pretty tough against the run. Arguzzo is solid. Ellis is solid. I think the guys they're playing at the other spot on the outside, Jimmy Hall and Drew Smith, have done a decent job. What we haven't really seen, Steve, until this past Saturday, was some decent pressure on the opposing quarterback. Part of that's been a function of the offenses they've been playing, where it's, especially Cal, it's that quick passing game, it's quick release, there's no chance to get to the quarterback. But they started to put some pressure on Western's quarterback on Saturday, in effect. Guy to maybe keep an eye on for your fans on Saturday is number 7, Afadi Odenigbo, who's a redshirt sophomore out of Ohio. He pretty much was coming in on strictly passing downs last year and ended up with 5.5 sacks. And he had a couple of sacks on Saturday and forced 3 fumbles, something that's only been done a handful of times in the Big Ten. So, I think they're going to get more pressure up front. They were without one of their guys on Saturday, C.J. Robbins, suspended by the Big Ten for one game for throwing a punch. He'll be back this week. And I do think their defense overall is going to be turn out to be pretty decent.
Special teams. Mitchell obviously hasn't had a long field goal attempts. He's 2 of 2 and his long's 28. Gardone is the special teams player of the week. And Northwestern's blocked 3 kicks this year. I mean, I know Pat puts a lot of emphasis on it, but you're obviously seeing the payoff.
Well, and here's the thing. The special teams really had not performed very well prior to Saturday. Saturday, they blocked 2 of those kicks, a punt early on, and then a field goal right on the last play of the half. And, yeah, I mean, he is the special teams coach, so this is an area of particular pride for him. Mitchell taking over for really one of the most accurate kickers, yeah, I think, anywhere in Jeff Budzien, who only missed 3 field goals the last couple of years and probably should have won the Grozo Award at least once. So Mitchell's got some big shoes to fill, and he wasn't even number one going into camp. So they haven't really gotten him too many chances. Part of that's been a function of the struggles of the offense. Gradone had not punted especially well until Saturday, but I'll say this. When you punt 7 times, then you better make sure your punter's doing the job. And he was terrific on Saturday. He placed 6 out inside the 20. And so, I think that's become an area of strength for them. They haven't really gotten the return game going. That's something that I think they're putting a real emphasis on this week.
Last one. Can you put a value on Miles Shuler transferred in from Rutgers? Can you put a value on what he's meant considering all the injuries?
Well, I mean, I think to have a guy with some experience and some speed, and he's certainly got that, that's been big. And I think it's been a process for him because we saw this with Kyle Prater, too, transferred from USC. It just it takes a while, and it's taken Prater a while. He had kind of a breakout game against Northern Illinois. And I think they're still waiting for that from Shuler, but he's made some nice plays for him. They moved him to the punt return man this week. He had been handling kickoffs, and he didn't really get many chances on Saturday against Western, but we'll see if he gets any more opportunities this week. But I know they're glad to have him. They had recruited him coming out of high school. They were disappointed. He ended up going to Rutgers, and then when he decided that he wanted to look around, they welcomed him. And it's funny because he's kind of a similar stature to Benrick Mark, and he's wearing the same number. So sometimes if you kind of don't look too closely, you look out there and you say, hey, Benrick's back. No, not quite, but he's a guy I know they hope can have an impact down the road.
How do you look at Saturday? I mean, what are some things on your checklist you're looking at going into this game?
Well, obviously, I think that Northwestern's got to get more out of their offense. That's probably an understatement. But they've been so inconsistent, and even in things that they normally do well, Steve, like third downs, they've been one of the best teams in the Big Ten on third downs traditionally, and last week they were not. And they just seem to be not quite clicking. It's not that Trevor is getting out there and throwing a bunch of interceptions. It's not that These guys are dropping everything he throws. It's just that they're just kind of missing. And you just have the feeling if they can iron some of this out, they've still got some guys on this team who can be pretty good. So I guess what I'm wondering about is, will it help them going on the road for the first time? Because they've played three games at home, and they haven't really played very well. And they've been a pretty good road team the last few years. So I think in a weird way, going to Beaver Stadium on Saturday in front of that crowd may actually be kind of a galvanizing, have a galvanizing effect on them. I think it could be a good thing. You know, that said, I think they're looking at it as a fresh start. I'm anxious to see if Trevor can perform better. I'm anxious to see if these freshman running backs will be intimidated at all playing in front of that crowd, and playing against that defense, which is played so well so far. So I think those are the things. The other thing that I'm interested to see is whether Tony Jones is back this week. Yeah. He practiced today, and to get him back would be a big boost for this offense.
Yeah, it would be a huge boost without a doubt. They've had too many injuries on that side for, you know, which just crushes consistency. I mean, it just kills consistency. Dave, always a pleasure. Appreciate it, my friend. Can't wait to see you on Saturday.
Looking forward to it. It's been a long time. I always enjoy coming there, and it should be. I think it's going to be a good game.
I
have no idea what's going to happen, but I have a feeling Northwestern will play better. We know how well Penn State has played so far, so it should be fun.
I think it will be. Dave, thanks a lot.
Steve, anytime. Good talking to you.
Dave Ennett, play-by-play voice, Northwestern football. We'll come back, wrap it up, why Danny Woodhead has been more productive in his NFL career than Jerome Bettis as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. yards a carry for Danny Woodhead in his career. Incredible. I mean, every time he carried the ball, he's almost a yard better than Jerome.
But he carried it on third down a lot of times, third and long.
Yeah, and he has in his 386 carries, he has 90 first downs.
On third and down, a third and long, they're not playing eight men in the box, that's for sure.
That's one first down every four carries. Oh. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. How many times did he fumble the ball?
Four.
One in every 90 carries. That was the Jerome Bettis average. One in every 90.
Okay.
You're
this
talking
is one in every
Tony Dorsett.
This is one
land.
In every. This is one in every 100.
But you're talking Tony Dorsett land.
Hey, this is one every 100.
But he only carried the ball 300 times.
And he had 181 receptions.
Ooh. So receptions don't count.
Ooh. Guess what? If you fumble, it's a stat.
He was, forget it. You know what? Sometimes you just cannot argue with you.
It is the theater of the absurd. Of course, Jerome Bettis is on the doorstep of the Hall of Fame. Danny Woodhead's on the doorstep of a pension and getting everything out of his career. And getting everything out of his career.
Problem
Danny,
is,
he can't play. He broke his leg. He's a 5'8", 200-pound situational running back. Okay, out of Chadron State. All right, he got seven seasons. Bill O'Brien loved him. Loved him. Oh?
Jerome's going to make the Hall. We're all going to take a bus and go see it.
Jerome, I think, might make the Hall once the Veterans Committee votes.
That's
I just
where
think
he's going to make it.
The problem he has right now is it's becoming too clogged up as the seasons go by.
Yeah, that's where he makes it, is the Veterans. Yep. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he'll get it. He'll be one of the two veteran guys that will get in at some point. He'll make it. He'll deserve to make it. But every time I bring up the 3.9 thing, it gets your goat, and you take the bait every time. I mean, the fact that you actually seriously argued with me about Danny Woodhead was absurd.
I didn't argue with you. I said, how many carries did he have? Five?
The theater of the absurd, and you jumped into the pool.
You just want to take shots at my favorite running back ever.